Welcome to The Telegram. I'm Tim Stanley. Britain's Parliament has said no. Congress has yet to decide. But whatever anyone else says, Barack Obama seems determined to go ahead. So would it be right for America to intervene in Syria? And if so, where will that leave the United Kingdom? I'm joined in the studio by Brooks Newmark, the Conservative MP for Braintree, and The Telegraph's Janet Daly and Con Coughlan. Last week, the British Parliament voted against military intervention in Syria, and David Cameron says that he'll respect that decision. In that case, said Barack Obama, the United States will go it alone. The President is seeking approval for action from Congress, but his Secretary of State, John Kerry, has suggested that he'll do it even if the legislature votes no. So after 2 years of inaction, the President seems to have developed a conscience and grown a backbone. But is he right to pursue military action so vigorously and even obstinately? And if he does end up going in like Rambo, where will that leave the United Kingdom? Let's start by tackling the first question. Is Obama right to be pursuing a military intervention at all? Brooks Newmark, you've just come back from the region. What's your take on this?
When I was in the region, I met with both President Jarba, the leader of the Syrian Opposition Council, and General Idris, the head of the Free Syria Army, as well as a number of other opposition fighters. And the one message I took back with me before I came back for the debate was that if we don't vote in support of taking some form of punitive punishment against Assad, this will send a green light to Bashar Assad that he can continue slaughtering and gassing his people with an impunity. And I'm afraid last Thursday's vote, in fact, was just that. It gives him the green light to continue.
But we're not just debating in the case of America punishing or making a point about the use of chemical weapons, are we? Because Barack Obama has said that his goal is to make it difficult for Assad to stay in power. The exact quote is, he said, "We have a broader strategy that will allow us to upgrade the capabilities of the opposition." So this is about picking sides, isn't it?
We've already picked sides. We've already said we're supporting the Syrian Opposition Council. I think it's farcical for anybody to say, you know, we're not for regime change. I'm afraid we are. We have sided and we've been supporting the Syrian Opposition Council and the Free Syria Army. So I think having made that decision politically, we should follow through. And I think the purpose of this attack, if and when it takes place, is to both degrade and neutralize Assad's ability to continue slaughtering and gassing his people. And I hope that we leave it up to the Free Syria Army, frankly, to clean up afterwards on the ground. We don't want British boots on the ground. We don't want to put our pilots' risks at life. But what we do want is to actually help the people on the ground who we are supporting, the Free Syria Army, and give them as much support as possible to get Bashar Assad out.
Okay, thank you. Con, how would you respond to that?
Well, I agree with a lot of what Brooks is saying. My only thought on all this is that we need to proceed with caution, because the reason we now find ourselves in this mess, particularly in the UK, is we've moved too quickly. With the legacy of Iraq, I think people need to make the arguments very clearly, and people need to be convinced that the evidence that proves Assad was responsible for this latest attack is there. Because before we go and start another Middle Eastern war, people need to be reassured that we need to do it, why we're going there, and also what will happen once the bombs have stopped falling. What kind of a government are we going to have in Syria once Assad's been overthrown? You only have to look at what's happened to Libya and Egypt, two countries where the British government and the American government push for regime change. You just look at the current mess that exists there today, and you see that these actions do have consequences. So, as I said, I just want to proceed with caution. Assad is a bad man. This is a despicable regime, not just because of its association with chemical weapons, but what they've done to the Syrian people over 40 years. So I'd love to see the back of them, but let's do it properly.
Janet.
this is the story from the Obama, the original question that you asked about Obama. This is the story of an absolute vacuum in terms of foreign policy. He is now on the hoof, inventing it as he goes along. If we had intervened 2 years ago, when it was apparent that Assad was suppressing what at that time were not jihadi rebels, but were legitimate opposition to his regime, if we had intervened then, in a sense, I'm saying, I suppose, the diametric opposite of what Con is saying, is that we've had entirely too much caution in this matter. We've held back far too long. It would have been possible to make Assad see sense. It would have been possible to bring about a real threat, not only to Assad and to his use of chemical weapons, but a subsequent threat to the Iranian regime, to the Russians who are supporting both Iran and Syria. We would have had much more leverage, and we would not have found ourselves in this desperate position of having to send in missiles in what is now, no pun intended, an explosive situation in which jihadi and al-Qaeda elements have had great influence on the rebels and have taken power in the rebel forces. We have hesitated and been left in this void that the Obama administration has created in terms of interventionism, so that we're now making it up as we go along. The reason that Obama's moves have become apparently so much more militant in the last 48 hours is because Republican hawks, interventionists like John McCain, have pushed him in that direction. But he's being pushed hither and thither because he really was not interested in having a policy on the Middle East at all. And now we're paying the price for that.
Is it not also the case that he felt himself to be elected because people wanted an end to wars overseas?
He wanted to be the anti-Bush. The point is that he is now exploiting, or has been until very recently, exploiting that position of being the anti-Bush. And I'm sorry to say that there are an awful lot of Republicans on Capitol Hill who seem to be reveling in the fact that they can create the kind of obstacles and the kind of resistance and the kind of discredit for the Obama administration that Bush had to suffer at the hands of the Democrats. And that is really cheap party politics, partisan politics, at a time when it's very inappropriate.
And what went on last Thursday was cheap party politics.
Exactly.
You know, people must stop conflating what went on in Iraq, where there were no weapons of mass destruction, with what went on in Afghanistan, which was a response to 9/11, to a humanitarian crisis that is going on today, right now, in Syria. We've seen over 100,000 dead, at least 1,500 people killed by chemicals, by the Assad regime. This is, and I'm sure Con may or may not disagree, this is much more akin to the Balkans, more like Bosnia and Kosovo. It's a humanitarian crisis, and we should understand that. Yeah. You can't conflate all issues and say we're not going into any situation at all. Obama is the leader, whether he likes it or not, of the free world.
The one remaining superpower.
He has the most power. The U.S. is the superpower. It is a member of the U.N. Security Council. You know, responsibility comes with that leadership. Okay. You can't abrogate that responsibility.
I would just like to come back on the Balkans point. The reason the Balkans campaign was a terrible mess is that the Western leaders did not have a clearly thought out strategy for how to deal with the mess in the Balkans. They stumbled into the Balkans, and it took about 4 years before people realized the scale of the issue. And it wasn't until the Americans actually got their act together that we actually did something proper in the Balkans. And coming back to Janet's point about the hesitation, I agree, we've lost a lot of time with Syria. And the reason I think we've really messed up with Syria is that there has been no strategic overview. There is a very good argument, and Senator McCain has made this in Washington, there's a very good argument for America to get rid of Assad because of the damage this would do to Iran.
Yes.
And the Iranians have helped Assad turn the tide on the battlefield this summer. And in fact, until this latest chemical attack, Assad was winning the war with Iranian backing. We need to step back. We need to have a proper strategy. What are we seeking to achieve in Syria? Apart from the humanitarian crisis, apart from getting rid of Assad, what are the outcomes we want?
Okay.
Let's sort that out, and then let's
act. The big question for me, though, is if all this is true, if the morality of it is so apparent, if the strategic benefits are there, why is the public overwhelmingly against this? And I don't just think they're overwhelmingly against it because of memories of Iraq. I think they're against it because they don't like the nature of some of the people in the rebel coalition. I think they're against it because they don't like the thought of an intervention which has not been strictly defined. So they don't know. Not only do they not know how we're going to get out, but actually it's not entirely clear how we're going to get in. There is many good reasons for ordinary people
because the case was not properly made. This has not been democracy's finest hour. The Obama administration didn't make a proper case in America. David Cameron certainly didn't make a proper case in Britain. If you remember, the Blair government, on a false prospectus, spent months making the case for going into Iraq. The Bush administration made a very eloquent case for going into Iraq and saying we have to clear the swamp and
Janet, that's the most perverse thing I've ever heard said. That this isn't democracy's finest hour, it's quite the opposite. This is the most democratic our foreign policy has been for 10
that's
years.
That's a different argument.
In the
case
of Tony Blair, yes, he made his argument very well. It turned out to be based upon fabrications. In this case, people have heard the
argument.
That
is a different...
They've debated.
No, they haven't
heard... They disagree with you. That's what's gone wrong here. They disagree with you.
They haven't heard the arguments, Tim, because nobody has made the arguments. Nobody. Everybody has been terrified. Everybody has been behaving in a very equivocal, stepping back, terrified of taking a commitment way. And as a result, nobody has made the case. It's no wonder that people are very anxious about this because the politicians, the political leadership has failed.
Okay, Brooks.
Yeah, you know, actually, ironically, I think democracy has had its finest hour in that the representatives of the people out there, the people listening to this today, made representations to their members of parliament and were not convinced, with the result that the majority of parliament said no. Now, I think David Cameron deserves a lot of credit at the end of that debate saying, look, I've got it. Now I may disagree that we should rule out anything at all going forward, but I think from a democratic standpoint, it was a good debate and a decision was made and we have to respect that decision.
Just a second.
The important thing, though, that I want to say is that there was a lot of misinformed or disinformed debate during that. And 2 points I'd like to raise briefly are, number one, I disagree with you. I think we did suffer the hangover of Iraq. I think people out there and people in Parliament feel very let down by the political classes when it came to Iraq. And I think there is a lot of neuralgia out there over Iraq. The second thing that really winds me up, though, is the very effective disinformation campaign of Putin and of Bashar Assad over al-Qaeda. Mm-hmm. When this revolution started, there was no presence of jihadis at all in Syria. Syria is a highly, highly secular country with a Sufi, not a Salafi, tradition. Al-Qaeda started coming in about 18 months ago and have grown because we have not supported the moderate majority. When I met many fighters on the ground, they said simply, we're running out of bullets. Bashar Assad has the Russians and Iranians on his side, and the extremists have these very wealthy Qatari, Saudi, and Kuwaiti businessmen helping them. But us, the moderate majority out there, the 15 million Sunnis, 150,000 FSA fighters, are getting no support. Now, you know, the numbers, just to be clear to your listeners here on the ground, and I spent a lot of time on this, there's about 7,500 Jabhat al-Nusra out there, and there's probably about 4,000 more extreme group called Iraq Sham. Now, compared to the 150,000 FSA fighters, compared to the 15 million Sunnis and population of 22 million, we cannot say we are not going in because Bashar Assad is saying that he is fighting a bunch of jihadis. He is not doing so. Syria is not a radical fundamentalist country, and we should recognize
that. But you are acknowledging that there are al-Qaeda groups now currently fighting alongside the rebels then?
They're not fighting alongside of them at all, actually. They are a different group. They have a similar objective, which is to
get rid of Assad.
Mm. But actually they're not fighting side by side. I asked that question when I was out there. In fact, what happens is the FSA do a lot of the dirty work. The jihadis come in afterwards, effectively get control of small villages and so on, and make them little Islamic states, if you will. Yeah. So, you know, I think we've got to give the FSA credit where it is and not give.
But the bottom line is that Kurds and Christians are being butchered by people who are associated with the rebellion.
Well, Kurds and, you know, I met the Kurdish leadership when I was out there. I met the leader of the Christian Brigade called the St. George's Brigade. You know, I'm afraid the FSA is a broad coalition. They are not just Sunnis. They are Alawis. They are Christians. They are Kurds. They said to me, this is a political fight. And I repeat, a political fight against the Assad regime. This is not a sectarian fight. They made it very clear, and they pointed to several villages in the north, which are Alawite villages, which have not been touched.
Oh, true. Mm-hmm. But Assad will speak to Figaro and will say this is a fight against terrorists.
But that's if you believe Assad,
the point of debates like this is to debunk that myth,
yes,
and deal with that disinformation. We have to stop repeating the lie of Assad and Putin.
Yeah.
This is not a war against Al-Qaeda. This is a civilian uprising against a horrible regime, a mafia state led by the Assads and the Makhloufs. It's as simple as that.
I don't think that the public are buying into a lie as sold by Assad or Putin. I don't think they've got any more knowledge of that than they do necessarily the argument for war.
Our politicians are retailing it. Very few are.
I think what they're saying is this is a civil war. This is a very complicated fight that we don't entirely understand, with right and wrong on both sides. And when you have a civil war like that, intervening on one side could turn out to be a horrible mistake.
Sorry, you really think that there's right and wrong on both sides? You think that Assad has got things going for him?
No. Okay, there is no right on his side, although there are people who are forced to ally with him because they regard the rebel alternative as much worse.
Exactly, but that's the sort of thing we want to prevent. That's the sort of thing that our intervention could prevent, Assad being the only option for the people who... I mean, the jihadi movement into the rebellion has been made possible by our refusal to get involved. And if the democratic West pulls away and absents itself, then the jihadis will dominate the rebellion. And when Assad is defeated, it will be an al-Qaeda victory.
Con, how do you see it?
Well, I think Brooks has given a really excellent breakdown of what's going on the ground. But my question really remains, we've been looking at the NSA for the last 2 years. The reason we have not been able to give them more backing, the kind of backing they want, is they have failed on several occasions to reassure us of the kind of leadership that they would establish were Assad to go. And this void is something that we need to resolve. And also, I just think, going back to the misinformation of last week, this is why I think we need to have a proper discussion. Let's really drill down on the issues. If Assad was responsible for this, what action should we take? And I don't think the Prime Minister is right to rule out another vote. I think last week's events were done in a very cack-handed fashion. As Brooks knows, some of his colleagues didn't even make it back to the chamber to vote. And we need to have a proper, thorough discussion of the culpability of Assad, of the effectiveness of the NSA, the level of infiltration by Al-Qaeda. Let's thrash this all out and decide what to do, and then let's have a proper vote on it.
Brooks, were you disappointed in the behaviour of some Conservative members of Parliament during that vote, either those who argued against it or those who didn't show up?
Yes, I was, obviously, it was important enough for me, at least, that I... as soon as I heard that there was a vote and a debate, but maybe because I feel a little bit more passionately than most on this issue, is that I did fly back from Gaziantep at 3 a.m. to Istanbul at 7 and got back here by 10 a.m. It was important to me. This is a humanitarian crisis. Now, I think there was a mixed group within my own party, some of which we frankly just wanted to stick it to Cameron, which I think is unfortunate. I think there were those that genuinely are concerned about getting involved in another Middle East venture, and I'll name my good friend Adam Holloway, and I respect Adam for that. And John Barron, in fact, my Essex colleague, I think they put up good arguments. I just think there was too much politics involved on both sides. It wasn't just Labour. There was a number of... It was only 30 of our side that rebelled, frankly, but frankly, some of those should question why they were rebelling.
And some people were at a beer festival. Do you think there should be a second vote?
Personally, at this stage, I'm afraid I've got to agree with the Prime Minister's decision that we can't go back to the House with pretty much the same information, the same motion. There has to be something significantly different, I think, for us to to come back. I'm someone who would never say never in life, and a week is a long week in politics, but if there's another massive chemical attack, or if, you know, actually the Labour Party themselves said, let's give it time. Let's see what the UN findings are. Let's look at the intelligence. Now, frankly, if the UN findings show that indeed a chemical attack did take place and the intelligence is there to show very clearly that these missiles went from government territory into opposition territory, and it's clear for all to see, that means more open intelligence we've had in the past, then I believe we should come back to the House
precisely.
Again and rethink
yeah,
this.
Precisely.
Janet, second
yeah, I was just going to say, if do you think that if they had held the vote on the Monday, the following Monday, rather than the Thursday, after John Kerry's thunderous speech on Friday, and after the additional evidence that was put forward in America, do you think the outcome might have been different?
I think it might have been. If my colleagues were away and people missing votes for various reasons and people wanted to dig their heels in for other reasons and Miliband wanted to say play politics and say there still was enough out there, I am afraid. I think the result on Monday would have been a little narrower, but I suspect we still would have lost, if I'm honest.
Con, let's presume to wrap up that Congress votes yes, or even if it doesn't vote yes, Obama does it anyway. America goes in alone. What does that mean for our relationship with the US?
Well, it would be the first time, I think, since the Vietnam War that Britain has not fought side by side with the Americans on a major global security issue like this. So it is clearly going to have repercussions. I think our non-participation, together with the recent cuts to our defence capabilities, will make many in Washington see us very much as a power that's no longer worth bothering with. And I think that could do us immense harm going forward and jeopardise the future of the Transatlantic Alliance.
Janet, do you think we're diminished by this?
Yes, absolutely. But I think it's temporary, because everything is temporary. And when there is a new occupant of the White House in a couple of years, possibly the same government or a different government in this country, the whole kaleidoscope will be shaken again. These things are never forever. But I think that for the duration, we have been badly damaged in terms of our global responsibilities and our relationship with America.
Anne Brooks, as an American, as well as a Briton, of course.
Actually, I moved here when I was nine.
You moved here when you were nine. Okay.
And I don't have an American passport, other than that.
or much of an accent.
Other than that.
Will the special relationship survive this one disagreement?
The special relationship will absolutely survive. We work very closely together on the intelligence side. We work very closely together when it comes to international aid. There are many ways in which we have a strong link together. Even President Obama, he may well have said France is our oldest ally, but he did say that Britain was his closest ally. And, you know, I have to say, we in Britain on Thursday looked over the abyss, and we need to decide, are we going to be Little Britain or Great Britain? I know which direction I want us to be. Mm-hmm. I want us to be Great Britain and take on that responsibility.
Brooks Newmark, Janet Daly, and Con Coughlan, thank you very much. For more opinion and commentary, you can find us at telegraph.co.uk.